podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by SmartThings, the easiest way to create a smart home. SmartThings lets you control your home using your smartphone from anywhere. For 10% off any home security or solution kit, visit smartthings.com/twit and use the code TWIT10. And by lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 176, recorded on Tuesday, August 26, 2014. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Gina Trapani.
All right, we're back in the saddle, all three of us. Ron, we missed you.
It was good to be back.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yes, it was good to have you back.
Yes, it was good not to be here, but it was also good to be back.
That's usually
the same thing.
Yeah, that's kind of what my vacations end up being.
Yeah.
It was like, I miss you guys, but I'm also happy to
vacate. I gotta tell you, it was perfect time to be in New York City.
Yeah.
New York City in August, I was like, oh, it's gonna be so hot, but it was like mild, mid-70s, maybe highest was like 80. It was like perfect. It's good.
It's been nice.
Yes.
Don't say anything about it. Just don't say anything.
Jinx.
But you know what that means? The mild summer means you're going to get a brutal winter, Gina.
Shut up. Okay.
Anyway, moving on. Anyway, it's good to be back. But you couldn't just stop at one Ron this
no,
week.
We
you
were,
needed to double down.
We were Ronless last week, so this week we're Ronful. And we have Ron Amadio returning.
What's up, guys?
We're Mars awesome Technica. It's great to have you back, sir. Reviews editor, of course, at Ars Technica. Always writing some pretty awesome in-depth stuff. A lot of your coverage on Android, you know, sometimes you touch on news and sometimes you go in detail on just certain aspects of Android that you're not seeing, you know, everybody else writing about. I always appreciate that about your work. So it's always great to have you on the show, sir.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. So let's see here. This week, we've got a lot to talk about, as we usually do. We're going to be talking about version L and what the L might stand for. We thought we knew. We might be wrong.
Some speculation.
Dun, dun, dun. What else? We're going to be talking about the future of the Amazon Fire Phone. Some interesting details that are kind of out about the Fire Phone. The Xiaomi Mi 4. We have it in-house, and Ron Amadio wrote up a very extensive kind of review of this device, which, you know, we just haven't seen a lot of here in the States. So we're going to talk about this and a whole lot more. But before we get to the news, we have other kind of news of the breaking variety.
It's just coming in on the wire.
This just coming in. Thank you to the chat room for alerting us to this. It was JJ Carrot 4884. Nice name, by the way.
Yeah. It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
This literally came into the chat room right before we started the show, so I only know vague details, but basically
it's a good one.
An Android app rolled out an update that ended up blacking out the National Weather Service. Not entirely sure how this happens, but basically the Weather Service was reporting no information thanks to, supposedly, according to Forbes anyways, an Android app that apparently did something really wrong.
Jeez.
Oh, right. Yeah. This is what happens when you don't rate limit your calls to the website from an app.
There we go.
Yeah.
There wow. we go.
I mean, it's also what happens when your website, you know, doesn't...
Yeah.
Like, you know, check for non-rate limiting apps and clients and can't block them, you know, more quickly. But it really depends on what happened. But yeah, I mean, an app can certainly do this. An app can make calls, you know, if it's not optimized or if it's just checking too often. I mean, you get a widget or something, it can be making requests every few seconds. And if it's a popular app, then it's a DDoS,
yeah.
Right? It's a distributed denial of service attack.
Checking a couple of seconds by a factor of thousands to hundreds of thousands of users, you know, possibly millions. Yep. And then next thing you know, the National Weather Service is down.
No big deal.
No big deal.
No biggie. Yeah, everybody really, just pulls information from there, you know, and puts it out of their own.
When was the last time you used the National Weather Service? Let's be honest.
Well, we use services that use the National Weather Service, and actually, people use those quite often. So it could have, But there you go.
For those of you who
apparently developers on Android wield intense power.
Well, just think, I was going to say, for those of you, and probably many of you in the audience, many of us here at the table, many of you in the audience probably work in some capacity of IT at some point in your life, and we all know that day when you're just sitting there and you're reading, you're reading Grantland or whatever, and then your phone rings. It's like, is the website loading? Like,
right.
Just like, oh, geez.
Oh, no. Yes.
So, there you go.
Well, there we go. All right. It's always great to start off with some breaking news, but now let's talk about just regular, you know, boring news.
Stay tuned with Android News.
Brian, just for the record, the boop boop a doop boop probably isn't necessary because it's already in the intro.
I feel like I needed it, though.
Okay.
It helps me set the tone.
That's true. It does kind of like warm up your vocal cords to get to news voice.
Oh, man. I want some sort of reference to World War II next time you do that. News from the front.
That Hitler's a bad apple.
Well, anyway, so ever since we saw Android L get unveiled at Google I/O, there's this speculation. This is the next version. What is it going to be? Everybody seems, you know, convinced it's going to be Lollipop or Lemon Drops or some
Laffy Taffy. Still holding out for Laffy Taffy. Like, I think it's going to be a last minute turn.
Well, it seems as if the latest bit of speculation is based on some references in the code to a quote LMP preview release that it might be Lemon Meringue Pie.
That makes some sense. I could see that.
I could see that, I guess, but Lollipop seemed like it worked. Lollipop it, just
yeah,
seemed...
Yeah, I want to go on record and say I hate this name, and Lollipop is way better.
Agreed.
So, like, just think of what is the mascot going
to
look like?
I know, that's what I've been trying to figure out. Like, it's going to look, it's going to look like key lime pie is what it's going to look like.
Right, yeah, I've seen fan renderings of, like, the Lollipop icon, and it looks really cute. Like, you know, it's a little Android head, and it's got a mouth, and it looks good.
So these references can be found in the Android SDK. LMP appears 9 times in a search of the AOSP and Wi-Fi certification for what's expected to be in the Nexus 9. And HTC's Volantis tablet also shows the firmware as LMP. So
it's appearing in more places.
It's creeping. It's creeping in.
This is LMP creep.
This is LMP. This is a standard LMP creep. Yeah. That's what happens. I'm with Ron, the Unity of Ron's. I do not like Lemon Meringue Pie. I did not like Key Lime Pie. I did not like, you know, I want to stick to Lollipop. That's my vote. So.
But as we learned with Kit Kat, there can be two names. So even Kit Kat is internally called Key Lime Pie in all the source code and in firmware and everything else, and externally it's called KitKat. So this could just be a silly internal name, and they could do something crazy like partner with, I don't know, Lifesavers.
I was going to say, or the biz dev team hasn't nailed down the deal, and the Laffy Taffy people haven't come up with the Laffy Taffy money, and now they're courting the Lifesaver people.
But now that I think about it, you know, it's not just about the name or the deal. It is also about the little icon.
Oh yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Because if it was a Lifesaver, that would look a lot like, you know, possibly donut. You know, if it's really small, so they couldn't do that, right?
Well, what's funny is that John Fingus in the chat room, as you can see, John says not expecting Google to intentionally put lemon in the name, which I think is a great observation there. So John, well done.
Start your headline.
No kidding.
So
No, it's true. Lemonheads, Laffy Taffy. Yeah. I don't know. It feels like there's got to be something going on. Why, if it was going to be Lemon Meringue Pie, wouldn't they have just said Lemon Meringue Pie at Google I/O? I mean, it just feels like there's got to be something else going on if they are doing this whole mysterious L thing.
They like to mess with us. That's all.
They do.
That's what it is. No, it'd be great is if they do name it Lemonheads, and then they can transition away from desserts into early 90s alternative bands.
Okay. They're like, we're pivoting.
And then the next version could be Mud Honey.
Yeah.
And then the next version can be
Nirvana.
Yeah.
No, I see where you're going with this. I kind of like it, actually.
We're pivoting.
Offspring.
Yeah.
Pixies.
Yeah, exactly. See, they've run out of candies, and so they're going to go for 90s alternative.
Okay. I don't know what you do with Q, but...
Q Lazarus? Goodbye Horses, that song? Anyway.
Kind of falls apart a little
bit. Yeah,
it does,
there, a little bit.
Anyways.
Move on.
Okay, moving on. Gina, what's up with Verizon?
Moving on, Verizon. So the information reports that Verizon is planning a new global app store to compete with Google Play that will include partnerships with carriers and OEMs, with plans and discussions still in early stages at the moment. That's the information. Recode posted a Verizon statement denying that they have these plans, but the information came back and said, we back our scoop 100%, saying that Verizon's cleverly worded denial doesn't reveal the full truth. Of course, this wouldn't be Verizon's first attempt at an app store. They just shuttered one back in 2013 after 3 years. In this case, however, this would be more of an industry-wide effort as opposed to simply a Verizon app store to challenge Google and potentially benefit from the significant rise expected in app store revenues. So Verizon app store. Try it again.
Or a Verizon, that's what I'm trying to figure out on this. Is it a Verizon app store or is it an app store that Verizon helps kind of bring to the surface, trying to get everybody in on it so that there's like a united app store that isn't Google's app store that's making, you know.
So like a Verizon back at jar or whatever that was.
Kind of, something like that. So I don't know. I mean, Verizon's app store kind of sucked pretty bad. But, you know, if this is something different and if there's all that backing, I suppose it's possible. Having said that, it's really hard to beat the behemoth, which is Google, particularly in the fact that Google is so embedded in the experience,
right?
You know, the Android experience.
And then the behemoth underneath that, and then the closest competitor is Amazon, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you got two, you know, like, it feels like the independent app store, while I like the idea, I just don't think there's enough demand or enough room for traction.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. They have to offer customers something different, something new, something that the Google Play Store doesn't. And I don't really know what that is. I mean, you can already pay for your apps through the Play Store through your carrier, right? In some cases.
Yep, you can.
So it's not like that would be...
Oh, I got it. Okay, so what if the Verizon App Store, the Verizon-backed App Store, is like a subscription model? And you pay $9.99 a month, and you can download all apps that are offered in the store, unlimited.
You know, that's not too far-fetched. Sprint has App Pass, and that's kind of what that is, right? It's a subscription service offering apps separate from Google Play.
Yeah,
and that's also
These things are never about consumers. It's always you know how can Verizon's App Store benefit Verizon, and they probably just want to have something where they can show off their stupid exclusive apps, like, you know, the NFL Sunday Ticket app or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this was my question about this app store. Does this mean that users would actually get to uninstall some of the crapware that they issue with their handsets? Like, that would be nice. Yeah. This is the thing, though. It doesn't benefit Verizon unless people are actually buying apps from it, right? And so, I mean, it's got to be something. Because these phones are also going to be shipping with the Play Store, right? I mean, one of the issues that I had with Amazon's App Store is like, oh, where did I buy this from? Oh, here. Not there. It got confusing.
Yep.
And, you know, even looking at Amazon's success or really lack thereof with the App Store would make Verizon stop and think. I don't know. Then again, I'm sure if they see money in app stores, why wouldn't they?
But
at least try.
Is Amazon's App Store not a success? I mean,
Amazon's App Store exists for Fire devices.
Right.
They put it on Android so they can claim they have more reach or whatever. But yeah, the whole point of it is just so they can do ecosystem stuff without Google. Verizon, I don't know what they're doing.
Unless they're building an ecosystem.
Google-less Verizon phones.
Never know. You never know. Hmm. I mean, Verizon already, of all the carriers, is the one that's uber hypersensitive about, you know, maintaining the devices. They've got that whole Verizon maintenance, you know, side where you got to bring the phone into them, where they can only work on it. Like, you think about it in the, you know, the MBAs in the conference room at Verizon, thinking about, like, looking at how can we differentiate, and what if we create an entire, you know, ecosystem where people buy a Verizon phone and they get apps from us and stuff. I could hear this conversation happening. You know, like, I can see the deck. I can see the PowerPoint deck that some suit put together. You know, whether or not it works or not, I don't know. But it's that same all-inclusive thinking that Verizon, honestly, is about 60% there already.
Yeah.
So
Verizon does have its own tablet. It has the Verizon Ellipsis. Maybe they break from Google for their their own devices. Oh, man. Yeah, that just wouldn't work.
And yet they'd have to convince Google to distribute Gmail and Calendar and Keyboard and all the core Google apps in their app store. And I'd really like to see that happen.
Yeah.
That would be a feat.
Yeah, it really would. So we'll see where this lands. You know, again, like you said, Gina, early stages, and history hasn't proven that this would be an amazing idea, but I suppose anything is possible. And then this story is interesting because I just feel like there was so much talk about this, and I hate to say it, I'm going to say the F word that nobody wants to hear. No,
wait, Brian, get your finger on the center. There we go. No, not that one.
Yeah, not the eye patch. The eye patch is not powerful enough to censor this.
There we go.
Fragmentation. Fragmentation was a big topic this week. This, of course, in light of OpenSignal's analysis of the Android landscape. It says that there are more than 18,000 devices seen this year reporting to its OpenSignal app, up from nearly 12,000 devices last year, for 60% increase in what it calls fragmentation. This has some... Yeah, the charts are crazy to look at. Super colorful. I have to give
it
credit.
It looks like modern art.
It really does.
Doesn't it?
And it means something.
What is that artist? There's an artist that does in that style. What is that? Oh, man. My junior year college art history class is failing me.
Failing you.
Yeah.
It just kind of looks like a mosaic of a piece of art, actually.
Yeah, I know. But there was a specific artist that did this kind of style. Anyway.
Samsung has 43% of the market share. Based on this report, with 12 of the top 13 devices, Sony came in second at 4.8%. So that's the difference.
Wow.
43%, 4.8%.
Whoa, look at that Samsung section. It's like a vortex. Like, wow. Doesn't it go in?
This is a visual representation of Samsung's method of throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. God. It obviously works pretty well.
Brian's going to make me fall out of my chair.
Yeah, I think
it's a tree map. It's a tree map. I couldn't remember what the name of this kind of chart is.
Oh, okay.
Tree map.
Okay.
Oh, yes, that's Samsung. Tree mapping us all.
What is the name of this one that you just switched to here, Brian? So it's brand fragmentation, but is this an earlier date? Or
is it last year or this year?
I can't see it.
Scroll down.
Count. Oh, I see. Count versus size. I gotcha. So let's see here. The report picks out a number of different areas. OS screens, for example, we're kind of looking at this. And
this is an information design. Like,
I know, right?
Like, this is fantastic.
Bonanza.
This is
bonanza.
Great. Like, aside from the data it's showing from an info, like...
Yeah, right? I know, right. They do a really good job of visualizing things.
Wow.
There's OS versions, there's screen size, all that kind of stuff. They're grouping of devices independently from many of them, you know, that are by the same manufacturer with similar hardware, where that matters. So that's something to keep in mind. Like, that Samsung chart shows you a million different Samsung devices, whereas a lot of them share identical hardware to a large degree. So, you know, that changes kind of what you're looking at here. And
this is not like the whole Android market, really. This is users of the OpenSignal app.
That is
true. Which is an app that measures cell phone reception strength. So, like, it skews very, very geeky, I would imagine. And I'm sure, you know, like, if Google did one or something, it would be a much more mainstream look at what's out there. This is just like the absolute geekiest people out there.
If this is the geekiest, why does the brand fragmentation go pretty mainstream with Samsung being dominant?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say it. Maybe it follows the wider thing, but I still feel like it would be it's a very niche section of the market that would run this app.
Mm-hmm.
This is so interesting. Yeah, imagine if they did this to the Play Store. The Play Store app, you know, like,
yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
They would look even worse. It'd be way more than 1,800, than 18,000 probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if 18,000 is a subsection of a wider population or, you know, number of devices. And, you know, mind you, like, what devices are we looking at here? Is it just phones? Is it, you know, are we counting the little thumb drives, you know, the little dongles, whatever, all those things?
No, it needs a cell modem at least. So yeah. That makes it, just about everything is a smartphone then.
There we go. Or a tablet. Now, this is interesting. Screen size fragmentation, of course, you know, this picture is to represent all of the different screen sizes that exist on Android. Whereas the reality, if you go, there's the next link in the doc, Brian, is a post from last month. From the folks at Shifty Jelly, from Russell Ivanovich, actually, of Shifty Jelly. And he kind of
dives into the Android screen fragmentation myth is what the article is called, where basically, like, you see this chart with a million different screen sizes, and that's not actually what matters. What matters more is kind of the resolution, is the screen, you know, dimension, right? Because it could be a large screen, but it shares the same resolution as a smaller screen. Right. You're still designing more or less for the, you know, same for both, unless one's like really large, then you want a tablet interface versus really small, you want a phone interface. But so there you go. So a little bit of debunking in that regard. No mention of Play Services and the role that it has, although, you know, keeping in mind that Play Services is about Google services, is not about the Android operating system as a whole necessarily. So that's helpful, but it's not the whole picture. So anyways, interesting, interesting graphs, interesting information, whether it paints an accurate picture or not. I'm not really quite sure. I don't know. What do you think, Ron? Do you think this is dead on or what?
I mean, it's the end result. It's not going to be different. Like it might be slightly different, like the actual big market thing, but it's not going to be meaningfully different. Like, yeah, it's a huge big mess and there's a billion different devices and Samsung's about half of it. And yeah, close enough.
And does it affect, like, does this air quotes problem of fragmentation affect people in meaningful ways that like prohibit them from using their device in the way that they want?
You know, you hear app developers complain a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of end users, like mainly, I guess most people would use Google apps. And it's the little, you know, it's all like the long tail stuff that suffers, I guess, where it's like me and, you know, 100 other people would love to use this app, but it doesn't work on this phone and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't
do too much app development. I stay away from the really hard stuff.
It's much easier to talk about it than to do it. That's what I found.
It's like those who can't develop right or whatever. Like, right.
I like.
Well, I talk a lot about development, and I've never developed a single thing in my life. We should probably ask Gina because she is the developer on the show. So
the SDK is more powerful than the sword, you guys.
I like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the only manifestation, I mean, you know, this says fragmentation. You could also read it as choice. And the only manifestation you see of this problem is in the Play Store. And this happens to me a lot when I'm picking an app for the arena, is that, you know, you look at the reviews of an app and, you know, there's a bunch that are glowing or whatever. But there's always that one or two, you know, that one guy or one or two guys that are like, this didn't work on my such and such and such and such and such and such version 8, you know, whatever. And you know, and you see that and you're like, okay, and look, there's a chance. The app that I recommended last week just started crashing on me randomly on my OnePlus One. Not a lot of people have a OnePlus One. I sort of accept that. I accept that the developer probably isn't fixing bugs for the OnePlus One, and that sort of risk that you take then when you buy a handset that not a lot of people have. But for the most part, I mean, I think that this is a good thing. I think there are a lot of really good mainstream Android device choices, and I think that the SDK is getting better. I think the platform's getting better, and I think it's getting easier for developers to make their app work across different devices, depending on what you're doing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, one thing I guess it does affect is, like, when I go shopping for a new phone, popularity is actually something that I kind of include in my decision, because then you get, you know, ROM support and you'll be sure all the apps work and stuff like that. Like, you know, if you get some weird, crazy phone that nobody else has, like this thing, who knows how good app support will be, you know, down the line during the life of the device, because nobody else has one to test stuff.
Well, very, very true.
And I agree and understand all that. But the one, Gina, I will take, you know, kind of issue with the one point where it's saying, you know, that you have a OnePlus and you know it's somewhat of a rare phone and you just assume the developer. But isn't it on the end user part? Like, shouldn't you say something anyway, though? Like, shouldn't, as a developer, wouldn't you want to hear what people are using also? I mean, like, it's one thing to say, to understand that you're going to go into some bumps because of the choice you made. But then also, like, that closing that loop and letting the developer know that, hey, I'm on this phone and this is what's happening. Isn't that a part of it as well, too, from a developer standpoint?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely, absolutely. Yeah. You absolutely want to hear from users. You're a good developer. You want to hear from users. Of course, when an app crashes on a phone, if it sends that crash report with a stack trace to the Google Play consoles. Like, as a developer, I see when apps crash. It helps to get an actual report that said I did this, 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 and then this happens, and I can reproduce this, and this is the phone that I have. But you get the model but yeah, of course, you do want to hear from users, yeah. And it makes me happy when I see people, you know, especially when I see developers responding to people who say this didn't work on my model phone when I tried this. So that's a good thing. But I sometimes feel like the problem is just overstated or cast in a negative light when I think it has both negatives and positives.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Interesting stuff.
There we go. Yes.
Did that answer your question?
I think so. I mean,
did we resolve this issue?
I think it's resolved. Motion carried. We can move on. And I'm sure we'll return to this wonderful discussion the next time there's a crazy study about fragmentation on Android. It just keeps coming. So there we go. Let's take a break and thank our first sponsor of today's episode. That would be SmartThings. It's the easiest way to control and automate your home with your smartphones. Really cool, great, just well-built hardware. We actually have the hub in studio here. With SmartThings, you can secure your home for a fraction of the cost of the traditional home security system. You can stay connected with your family, get notifications when people come and go. You can control and automate your lights, small appliances from wherever you happen to be. You can be notified if there's unexpected entry or movement in your home. Get instant alerts to prevent a small leak from causing a major flood. Detect when there's an earthquake if the camera shakes, you know, or the sensor shakes. I mean, we had an earthquake here in the Bay Area, and apparently, I'm sure SmartThings would be a great way to kind of monitor that if you happen to be away. Like my wife was. She was traveling, and then she was like, is everything okay back home? There we go. I was sleeping.
I was sitting in the airport at JFK watching everyone wake up on Twitter.
There you go.
It was literally at 6:30 in the morning on Twitter, and then all of a sudden, everyone in San Francisco woke up at the same time.
See, you could have tapped into SmartThings to see, you know, when people at your home were waking up. Getting started with SmartThings is actually very easy. They offer 3 smart home security kits, which are designed to help you protect and monitor your home. SmartThings has also introduced 4 brand new solution kits, which help you achieve specific goals like automating lights, saving energy, protecting your home from leaks. There's even a maker kit to connect and integrate your Arduino projects. Ooh, very cool stuff.
That's awesome.
Each kit includes a SmartThings hub, that just like the one Ron was showing off, with everything you'll need to turn your home into a smart home in as little as 15 minutes, including new and improved updates of SmartThings Zigbee sensors. In addition to SmartThings' own sensors and outlets, you can also add hundreds of other home automation devices from popular companies, including GE, Schlage, Honeywell, Eon, Nest Thermostat, Dropcam, Philips Hue, Wemo, Sonos, list goes on. But the really powerful thing about SmartThings is that it's an open platform, which literally means that it's compatible with hundreds of devices. There are thousands of things you can do with this product. To discover them, simply download the free SmartThings iOS or Android app. That's one app, limitless possibilities. To get started creating your smart home, visit smartthings.com/twit, and you can save 10% off the purchase price of any home security or solution kit by entering the code TWIT10, that's TWIT10, at checkout. When you use TWIT10, solution kits start as low as $170, and home security kits start at $350. You also get free shipping within the U.S. So that's smartthings.com/twit, and remember to enter the code TWIT10 at checkout, and we thank SmartThings for their continued support of All About Android and the Twit Network. All right, that's some awesome hardware right next to me, getting comfortably close, almost uncomfortably close, Ron.
If you had a SmartThings detector on your head, you would notice that something.
I'd be on my phone. I'd go, "Whoa, that hub is really close to my head right now." Okay, let's jump into hardware. Oh, Amazon.
So, how's that Fire Phone doing?
Oh, yeah, let's check in on the Fire Phone.
Here's a question. Anyway, before we talk about this, we're 4 fairly connected people in the technology world.
Sure.
Do you know anyone with a Fire Phone? Sub question, have you seen one in the wild?
I do know someone with this Fire Phone.
Really?
Leo Laporte.
I don't know anyone who even agrees with the concept of a Fire Phone. Like, it's just not compelling at all in any way.
The only one I've seen in the wild was in a meeting with Amazon. Oh, someone from Amazon's like, have you seen the new phone? I was like, yes, I've seen it. Thank you. You can put it back.
I do not know anyone, and I have not seen it. Wow. And I ride the subway pretty often and kind of check out what people are using. It's usually Samsung phones. I've never seen a Fire phone. And I feel like I would recognize it with all those cameras because I just feel like those corner cameras are just really announced themselves.
They do.
Or it would recognize you in that scenario.
So, yeah. It'd be like, hey, have you seen me? Hey, are you looking at all of an Android?
So does anyone have it? Does anyone have this phone, Gina?
Not a lot of people have it. So, okay, there's been an estimate of how many of these sold. Because, you know, Amazon's not talking. But the estimate, based on a couple of data points that extrapolated from a couple of data points, 35,000 units sold.
Oh my goodness.
35,000 units sold since the launch. That was one month ago. And this estimate was extrapolated from data from Chatika's ad network and ComScore. Of course, you know, Amazon hasn't revealed official numbers, but 35,000.
How many How many Facebook phones sold? Do we know that?
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
It really does.
Total flop, Facebook phone.
You know, it's such a bummer because I just feel like Amazon had an opportunity to do something really interesting and cool and different with the Fire Phone. And by that, I mean, you know, this may not be cost effective and I haven't certainly run the numbers for the business. But, you know, a free phone with Prime, free WhisperNet access that only lets you browse Amazon and its partners, right? So, like, you're not paying for a data plan. You get the phone and you can connect to Amazon. You can buy things from Amazon just through their free 3G network, which, you know, I suggested WhisperNet because I know that that's what Kindle used to download books. So, you know, contract free, something different, just something different. But it was just like a phone that does this, you know, with the same low contract price, but with a contract with a couple of these gimmicks that just didn't fly. Well, really bummed me out.
It didn't even do that. I mean, it was the exclusivity to AT&T once again, as opposed to embracing, we're excluding, you know, so as opposed to putting it out there for everybody, you know, I think the pricing was a little too high. But then also, I'm totally with you in terms of either coming up with a new, unique way to approach the carrier deal or something like that, or you want to innovate, that's cool. Innovate in a way that's actually effective. Instead of the lenticular 3D thing, you know, and the Firefly or whatever it is, the Firebug or whatever, that's somewhat
cool. Makes a little bit more sense. But
have it come with a Bluetooth headset that's different than anything you've ever seen, or watch, or something to expand why is it just this? Like, going back to what I was saying before the show, like, is there another way to do it? Like, can the phone be a different size, like a square or something? You know, like, totally blow our minds with an approach that nobody's been doing, as opposed to just replicating the same thing with a little gimmicky thing on top that's too expensive for most people. So
I think I think every Fire device, like the Kindles and everything else, is like notably inferior to, you know, anything with Google Play or any kind of like high-end device. And they've sold well because the price has been super low. And on the Fire, it was the same thing where it's like, this is kind of worse than every other cell phone because it doesn't have Google Play. And it's still the same price. It's still like $650 off contract or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, that's just not as good a product. People aren't going to pay the same amount for it, especially when like the most compelling feature was the ability to more easily buy things on Amazon and give them more money. Like, it's so like insulting to me where it's like, you can buy this and it's basically like a barcode scanner and you can give us more money that way. And it's like, you need to give me that for like free or something then.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's a cash register that you can put in your pocket. Right. And yeah. the thing about Amazon is that they're a very customer friendly company to the detriment of authors and content makers.
Yeah, I was going
to a fault. Their stuff is always underpriced, very low margins. I mean, they really go out on a limb in every other case to make something as cheap as possible and as easy for you to get as possible. And they just didn't do it with this. And I'm just still waiting for, I don't know. I think that here in the U.S. that these 2-year contract deals with a subsidized phone, I think that whole system is so broken and weird.
Yep.
I just want to see it get better. And I was hoping that Amazon was going to use this opportunity to do that. But again, it was just like, here's a cash register for your pocket, which I've always felt that the Kindle was. Like, the Kindle is a buying machine, right? It's not a reading machine. It's a buying machine. And in a lot of ways, these smartphones are also buying machines. But it was so useful that you didn't really think about the fact that it was really easy for you to spend money. But with the Fire Phone, it was just like completely unabashed.
So why didn't they take that a step further? And if you have a Fire Phone, you get an additional 5% off all your Amazon purchases. Like that, you know,
they got to do something. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. As opposed to like Prime, where, hey, you get all the stuff streaming and you get faster shipping and you pay us to do that, which now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, oh, God, I'm an idiot. I just paid $100 for the, you know, but if you give some sort of incentive to push people over the ledge to do it, then you'll see people jump. And if anything, they're building fences around that ledge to keep them from jumping.
Yeah,
that's a stretch of a metaphor if I ever heard one. So I'm sorry about that. But
price prohibitive, exclusivity.
Yeah, it's a bad combo.
And the gimmick, which, you know, unfortunately, in order to play this game effectively, you also need to be able to market your product really well. And the 3D thing, not an easy thing to market. A, you've got the backlash for people just kind of having a sour taste in their mouth because of 3D. And B, it doesn't show it on video at all. So if you're running a TV ad, no one's going to actually understand it or get it.
And also, how does it enrich my daily
usage? Well, exactly.
It's a bell and whistle.
Incredibly useful.
It's like remember when, I forget, and I'm sorry, I know we're we're Android experts here, but I forget the version of Android that rolled out the live wallpaper. But remember when that came out and the first thing...
Was it ice cream sandwich? Yeah.
Was it ice cream
Must
sandwich?
Be
ice
cream.
No, earlier.
I think it was earlier. I think it was earlier honeycomb? Than ice cream sandwich. I think it was honeycomb, yeah. But,
No, at least gingerbread, because there was that laser beam one. That
yes. Yeah,
oh,
right.
Laser beam one. Yeah, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm alone, but live wallpaper came out. I looked at it, I'm like, oh, that's cool, and then turned it off.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it was... And I feel like that's
the biggest problem with cell phone design today is... Nobody designs a phone just to be good, which is what was like really refreshing about Xiaomi, which we'll get to. But everybody's like, what gimmick can we give this phone that the person at the Verizon store can demo to the customer and wow them for 30 seconds so that they'll go and buy the phone? Like, Amazon uses the stupid 3D thing that doesn't work. Samsung uses the stupid fingerprint sensor that doesn't work and the stupid heart rate sensor that doesn't work. And, you know, HTC has the extra camera that adds depth of field that looks terrible. So nobody just says, let's build a cell phone that's just good and doesn't have anything crazy. Like, you know, the Fire Phone would have been great if it were cheaper, but they have to pay for all these, you know, the 1,000 extra cameras on the front of the device. So that raises a bill of materials and they can't sell it for cheap now. And it's just, that's what killed them.
Yep. Yeah, completely agree. If they had sacked the 4 cameras and just made the phone kind of feel a little bit more premium to the point to where you feel proud to have it, you know, because more and more these devices, they do so many things. But, you know, it's kind of like smartwatches to a certain degree, whether you want to admit it or not. It's kind of a fashion accessory.
What? I don't know what you're talking about there, Jason. I don't know. Oh, hold on.
I mean, the phones
I'm getting
have become
a text
that
message.
Too, you know. So I don't know. Yeah. There we go. Well, Fire Phone not doing so well.
I mean, so this is it's an interesting segue to our next story, which is another example of a either a failure that's a phoenix failure that's trying to rise from the ashes like a phoenix, but Barnes & Noble with their Nook tablet. You know, a couple of years ago, Kindle was all the rage and tablets started to come out. Barnes & Noble introduced their own branded tablet and it flopped to a certain degree. Well, now they're back, but they've partnered with Samsung as an OEM and they've come out with the Samsung Galaxy Tab 4 Nook tablet. And it's in Barnes & Noble's now, so it's a Samsung Galaxy 4. It's almost identical to it. It's a 7-inch 1280 by 800 display. It's got the Nook software that Barnes & Noble developed, as well as the Google Play Services suite, and it's $179, which is more than the Kindle Fire at $139, but you're getting a full-functioning Samsung tablet. Mm-hmm. So is this enough for Barnes & Noble to, you know, kind of change the direction of their competition with Amazon? I don't know. But I think this is a lot more probably accessible than the Nook, which was locked down into Barnes & Noble's own ecosystem, and they were trying to introduce media and things like that. Mm-hmm. This is saying, hey, this is everything that Barnes & Noble's got, and let's combine it with what Samsung and Google has and put it out there.
It doesn't have the little hook.
It doesn't have the little hook. You see, the little hook, that was a little bit of innovation.
Yeah, that's right.
The little hook was neat.
It was different.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know about innovation, but it was different.
But I don't know if this is going to be enough for Barnes & Noble at this point. But it's interesting.
$179 is a pretty good price.
Not bad. Yeah. For a brand people recognize. Mm-hmm. Clearly, it's got market dominance. We can go back to the infographics.
right.
Yeah, who knows? So.
Yeah.
But that's back.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll get one of those in-house to take a look at. Let's see here. What else? Ron Amadio, you wrote an article today about the future of Android One devices. We first, of course, heard about Android One and Google's plans for Android One at Google I.O. this year. When are we going to see these devices, Ron? What's the story all about?
The Economic Times of India says that the Android One will launch in India in early next month, so like a few weeks from now, where it'll be, this is like Google's goal to build and it was supposed to be an under $100 Android device for kind of the developing world. They're going to start in India because they have 1 billion people there and smartphone penetration's at like 10%. So there's a huge potential for growth there if you can just get like a good cheap smartphone out to a bunch of people. So they didn't quite hit the $100 barrier. They're going to come in at between 115 and 165, it said.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this is going to be what they said. Android hit 1 billion users at I.O., 1 billion active users. And this is kind of the plan to get the next 1 billion people. Just kind of go to, right, it's such a crazy number. Like go to the developing world and just kind of say, here is a dirt cheap Android phone that actually works and it runs stock Android and it gets automatic updates.
From Google.
And, you know, Google builds a reference platform and goes to OEMs and says, here, build this. And it's like a turnkey phone solution that they can just sell and make money on. So it's gonna be crazy. They're starting in India, and if it works, they're gonna roll it out to more and more countries.
Yeah. So from a developer standpoint, how do I formulate this question, Gina? What do you think about this device and coding your apps for a device like this once it comes out? Is that a priority for developers, since this is in some ways this is like the lower end Nexus device, right? It's straight from Google. It's a reference device.
Yeah, exactly.
Many people are going to have it. What does that mean for developers' intentions? Should they be focused on making sure their apps perform on an underpowered Android device?
I mean,
lower powered,
I think,
rather.
So. Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, this device, my first reaction was, whoa, 165 is actually a lot higher than 100. You know, and, I mean, I think in India, $165 is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually surprised that they missed. That feels like a big miss. I know it's 115 to 165. It feels like a big miss price-wise. But as a developer, you definitely want to optimize your app for lower power devices, because honestly, it can make your app better for, and again, this depends on what kind of app you build. If you're building a super intensive media, images and video intensive game, it's a different story than if you're building a simple to-do app. But for me, you know, optimizing your app for, you know, using bandwidth smartly and performing quickly and, you know, making sure that it doesn't crash or that it runs in a reasonable amount of time, that taps or get responded to quickly, that's all stuff you should be thinking about as a developer. It becomes more of a challenge for these lower end devices, but it's a challenge that I think every developer should be constantly sort of taking on and iterating. And certainly localization becomes an issue too. Right. You know, you want to get get your app translated, and you want to get it working, particularly for languages that are left to right or right to left, that kind of thing. But I think that it's pretty clear that this is the future of new users on the platform. So it may only make sense for developers to focus on that. I mean, not everybody can go to India and like spend time experiencing their app on a really crappy connection on a really low powered phone. I think there was that story about the Facebook team spending time in another country and realizing how bad their app was and like really kind of energizing, you know, getting energized to make it work better. Not everybody can afford that, but I think that that's actually a really good eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's interesting is this is the other half of the KitKat strategy. Like the other half of the strategy they started with KitKat, at least, you know, they slimmed it down so it would hit, so it would work well on 512 megabyte devices with half a gig of RAM. And now with Android One, they're kind of going out and saying, okay, we made the software run better. Now this is how you build a cheap phone that it will actually run well on, and we can get this out to a ton of people. If you look at the specs on these things, though, it's really sad because it's basically a Moto E, which was $130, has a 4.5-inch screen. It's like a Moto E with, like, two SIM slots. And, like, every day I cry that Google sold Motorola, because this feels like, you know, the plan B. Like, with Motorola, they're like, we're going to go out and build super cheap phones. And then they did it, and then they sold Motorola to Lenovo. And now they're like, okay, well, let's start up this cheap phone again with these companies that we don't own. And that's probably why they didn't hit the $100 price point, because mm-hmm. these companies were like, yo, we need to make more money than this, so we're going to raise the price. And it's like, why did you sell Motorola? This would totally work better if you owned an OEM.
That is a really good point. Yep. Cool. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it once it happens, and I'm not sure how difficult it's going to be, or maybe it'll be very easy to secure one of these devices and take a look at it in depth. But it's not impossible, because Ron, you wrote up an extensive piece on the Xiaomi Mi 4, which is only really, well, it's available outside of China, but it's definitely not available in the States unless you go through an importer. So it is possible to get these crazy pieces of hardware that aren't sold in the U.S. And, yeah, you reviewed it. I also happen to have one. I got one yesterday, and I've been playing around with it for 24 hours. I'm going to review it next week on Before You Buy. And so far, I'm super impressed, but I'm curious to hear what you think about the device.
So this is, yeah, like I was saying, Xiaomi is a really, like, refreshing company, because they build devices that don't have any silly gimmicks. Like, it's just a straight-up high-end smartphone that is well-built and well-designed, and it's not very original. Like, it looks like a big, giant iPhone. Mm-hmm. But Xiaomi's strength is in its execution. Like, you know, they're from China, and they don't really value innovation that much, and there's not much in the way of enforced intellectual property law. But they will take your idea and build a really, really good device out of it. So this is a top tier high end smartphone. It's a Snapdragon 801 processor, 2.5 gigahertz. It has 3 gigabytes of RAM, a 5-inch 1080p screen that looks amazing.
Yeah, it really does.
Basically, take a Galaxy S5, give it an extra gigabyte of RAM, bigger battery, and cut the price in half. This thing is $320 if you can buy it in China. We had to import it through an importer, which does a 50% markup, which kind of hurts. But still, at $480 or whatever it was, it's still a good deal versus mm-hmm. like a Galaxy S5, which is like $600 or $700. Oh my gosh, the camera app is so cool. If you turn on the selfie thing, it will try to detect your age.
What? Wait a minute, what?
What?
Yes. So see the button in the top right? Yeah, yeah. Press that. Okay. And if you stick a face in front of it, it should, at least mine.
There you go. Okay, yes, it totally does. It says...
Sorry.
How does it do that? It's totally saying 39, 38.
No.
It says male 42. I'm looking kind of old right now.
It's basically like, you know, like that carnival guy who will try to guess your age.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
And it detects like male or female and stuff. It's so weird.
That is
like,
so bizarre.
I don't know.
Yeah, make sure you're...
Oh, that's freaky. Oh, wow, since I'm 51.
You don't know how much I want to take it.
Oh, Jesus. let's put that far away.
Nailed it.
It has a lot to do with lighting behind you. Like, you can... if you have light behind you, it will claim that you are older than you really are. But so if you would like to be insulted by yourself,
I'm curious to know how that's useful though. Don't you know how old you are?
But look, it was neat and
it is different. I'll give it that. That is so weird.
The other thing is the software is God, what is it called? It's MIUI.
MIUI.
Right. So, you know, everybody skins Android, but Xiaomi, again, like, execution is the big deal here.
Yeah.
MIUI is available on hundreds of devices, just like CyanogenMod. You can download it and run it on your phone right now. And it is, it looks a lot like iOS. There's no app drawer, but it's incredibly fast. Like, it's so fast that they ship this thing to you in a power-saving mode that kind of turns down the processor, and it still runs fine.
Yep.
But, like, if you put the thing on full power mode, it feels faster than stock Android, I feel like. And I don't know, Jason, maybe you can
I would completely agree with that.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say that this is probably one of the snappiest phones on the OS level of any that I've used. Like, it pretty much – it feels the way I feel like it should. You know what I mean? When you're hopping through and launching things and all that, so –
yeah, guys.
Completely
love
agree.
It.
So yeah, it's really good.
The band around the outside is steel, which makes it feel really, really well built. Like, mm-hmm. It looks like a big iPhone, but kind of feels like one too. Like, the back is plastic, which isn't that great, but like, it's a decent plastic. And the back comes off, by the way, Jason, if you want.
Yeah, I saw in your post you need a suction cup for it, right?
Yes. Because,
you
mean,
like,
yeah,
the kit.
It's an interesting design decision because, like, Samsung has this little fingernail thing, and it always feels really cheap and crappy. But, like, if you feel this, it doesn't feel like the back comes off at all.
No, it really doesn't.
So you can't replace the battery or anything, but you can get, like, stylish backs that you can put on the back, you know, stuff that looks like fur or leather or whatever. It's all plastic, but you can get, like, a funky design on the back if you want.
I have to admit, at first glance, after not only seeing it online or all the stuff when you had it today, I mean, it's noticeable. I mean, it's noticeably iPhone-y, but then as you play with it, it feels good. It's got a good weight to it. It feels durable in a way that the Samsung plasticky phones don't, you know?
Yeah, no. And I mean, yeah, that's one thing that I was saying earlier on before you buy, we did a preview of this, is that all plastic is not made equal, right? And there are certain types of plastic that actually feel pretty darn good, pretty premium. And in the case of this device, that is absolutely true. It's plastic on the back, but I don't know. You know, again, I'm going to come back around to Samsung as the example here, but that's just because most of the time, for my personal preference, the Samsung plastic feels cheap to me. This does not feel cheap to me. It feels very solid and almost like it's not plastic. You know what I mean? So,
The software is super customizable. That's the other thing. So there's like a full theming framework that Xiaomi built. So there's a theme store, and you know, you can change the fonts, what the apps look like, all the icons. So you know, you can do stuff that looks really, really good, or you can do stuff that's like a straight up copy of like iOS 6.
Okay, I didn't.
Where like
it.
You know, they went and stole icons off of an iPhone and stuff, or you know, if you want every character to be like a small anime girl, you can do that too. Or like every icon looks like that. It's crazy. There's so many different things you can customize about the phone and just make it look different. And it's a big focus for them. And it's neat. It's like, yeah, this isn't stock Android, but there's so many new different things you can do with it. It's a really cool OS.
It's subtle innovation.
Yeah.
I dig it.
You can get it with Google Play. Where do your apps go? They have to be on the home screens?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or in folders. Okay, so it's just like iPhone where you don't.
iPhone.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like it didn't come with the Google apps, but
you got those, good.
Yeah, no, I got finally. Yeah. yeah, but if you go into the Mi Market, there is an app that you can install the actual Play Store from, and then from there install everything else. So I was able.
You could install an app to install the Play Store to install the apps that you wanted.
Yeah, and then
they partner with Google, so depending on what territory you buy it from, you can get it with or without Google Apps. So these are only available in China right now, so they don't come with Google Apps. If you buy them from like Singapore or India or something, then they come preloaded with Google Play and all that stuff. Just
nice.
Google doesn't do business in China, so there's really nothing to preload. That is hideous. Look, the little like magnet thing goes up and the tape's in, and oh, it's so bad.
Oh, it's so great though. But
wow,
yes, it is bad, but it's great, at the same time. I've been super impressed. Of course, the price is really good for this as well. What did we say? $480 for importing it. You can probably get it for even less than that. I should thank Pete Lambros, who's the guy who hit both Leo and I up and said, hey, I ordered
these, maybe from an importer or from a flash sale, I'm not sure, but he said he ended up with two, and he was either going to send it back to Xiaomi for a refund or sell it to us. So we ended up buying it to review
it.
That's
so cool.
And yeah, it's great. I'm really enjoying it, and I can't wait for my review next week. It's pretty awesome hardware. The hardware itself is just pretty spectacular. So
the only downside is don't buy them right now if you're a normal person, because they don't have LTE. They will later sometime. They haven't said when, but an LTE version is coming, because right now China doesn't have much in the way of LTE. So this one just does 3G. But it's cool. I bought this expecting it to be a joke.
Yep.
Like, oh, let's get this thing that looks like an iPhone, and we can kind of take pictures of it and make fun of it. And then you hold it, you're like, oh my gosh, this is actually like a really great device. Like, I never expected it to be this good. And it's really a shame that they steal Apple's design, because if they had just come up with their own thing, it would be much harder for people to dismiss the company. But they're just serial abusers of ripping off other people's design.
Yeah.
They don't need to. They can make such good devices if they just, you know, come up with something that looks slightly more original.
Mm-hmm.
But as much crap as we give these guys, look at a Samsung Galaxy Alpha. If there was no logo on this, the two devices look identical.
Interesting.
Hmm.
What I do like is there should be a new challenge, Jason, where you use this phone with all the Chinese apps.
Because that sounds like a fun challenge.
There's a whole bunch of apps that I can kind of guess by their icons what they are, you know.
Yeah, the coolest thing was this gave me like a look into China's ecosystem, because, you know, Google's not over there. So what's going on? You know, it's really hard to know unless you get a phone from China. So the way all the app stores work is it's like Samsung's dream, where it's like all the app stores are fragmented by manufacturer. So you buy a Xiaomi phone, you get the Xiaomi store, and you just kind of hope all the apps are in it. But the crazy thing is there's like some kind of federated back end among all the app stores, where the Xiaomi app store will actually search other app stores and offer to install apps from them without having to install another app store app, if you can understand all that. So like it offered to install apps from Baidu or whatever. It's such a huge mess. But I mean, you know, Google's not around, so they make it work.
Yep.
But, you know, the reason they can sell it for $320 is because it's basically the Nexus program as the basis for a company, like business model-wise, where it's like, we sell the hardware close to cost, and we make up the money based on, you know, ecosystem stuff. Like, you buy a theme, and, you know, we get part of that money, and that's the way they get their profits. So will they ever move out of places like China and India? It's hard, because Google is established everywhere else. Where like Xiaomi can kind of fill the vacuum of no ecosystem in China. Everywhere else, it's kind of like, well, you have to compete with Google now. And I don't know if your ecosystem stuff is going to go that well then.
Right.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So there we have it. The Xiaomi Mi 4. And full review coming from me next week. But definitely check out Ron Amadio's review on Ars Technica. Three full jam-packed pages of information on this device.
When you refuse
curiosity, and it's really
that's
cool.
A short article. That's not.
After the history of Android, I suppose it's a short article.
It's a light Ron article. Yeah. But on before you buy, but when you account for it, do you count the plane ticket to China to go get it into the total cost of the device?
Yeah, the importer, yeah, the importer cost and import, plus tax,
import exporter, import right. exporter.
There we go. All right, let's thank a sponsor.
Yes, we want to thank Lynda.com for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And Lynda.com is the greatest because we all love to learn. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. You can instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on software, web development, graphic design, and more. Lynda.com works directly with industry experts and software companies to provide timely training, often the same day new versions or releases hit the market, so you're always up to speed. All courses are produced at the highest quality, not like the homemade videos on YouTube. Courses are broken into bite-sized pieces so you can learn at your own pace and learn from start to finish, or just find a quick answer. Tools include searchable transcripts, playlists, and certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile. And that's great if you're a professional in that specific field. Whether you're a beginner or advanced, Lynda.com has courses for all experience levels. Learn while you're on the go at lynda.com. Apps for Android as well as iPhone, iPad, all the other devices. Lynda's on there, and you can learn on the go. With one low monthly price of $25, it gives you unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. Premium members with the annual plan can download their courses to their devices and watch them offline. Premium plan members can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. Lynda.com is perfect if you want to, you know, not just for learning software, but also they've got great business tutorials. Here is one of my favorite, Getting Things Done with David Allen. The guy behind Getting Things Done has made a video on Lynda.com, so you can learn about that whole business process straight from the guy who came up with it. Really fascinating stuff. Lynda.com is perfect for learning, you know, business concepts or learning software, learning how to edit video on Premiere as opposed to Final Cut or edit audio. All these amazing things that you need to do, they're all there on Lynda.com. Lynda.com also has courses on building adaptive Android apps and fragments, simple Android development tools, and Android essential training. For any software you rely on, Lynda.com can help you stay current with all software updates and learn the ins and outs to be more efficient and productive. And we've got a special offer for you to access all the courses free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid and try lynda.com free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid, and you get free access for 7 days. So check it out, and we want to thank lynda.com for not only sponsoring this episode, but keeping us in the knowledge, in the know-how.
Keeping us smart.
Keeping us smart, that's for sure.
Thanks for smartening us, Lynda. Yeah. Appreciate it. All right. Without further ado, let's check out some apps.
Some apps.
Apps.
A little deal here from an app we love, we all know and love, LastPass, which I use to manage my passwords. Had a free LastPass premium free deal for a year or 6 months. So the way LastPass works is you can download it, you can use it for free, but the premium, which is like $12 a year, which is like a buck a month.
Totally worth
gets
it.
Gets you the mobile app, which is fantastic. And so they partnered up with AppSumo. They've got a little deal here for new LastPass accounts. You can get a year free, a premium, or 6 months. There was a time when the deal worked for existing users. It doesn't anymore.
I got in on it. I saw it right when it came.
Come on. That's not fair.
But it was done really quickly.
Yeah.
It was done pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah,
not cool, LastPass. Not cool.
They fixed the bug.
Oh,
if you aren't using LastPass, you should sign up for it because it's pretty great. I don't know how I would live without LastPass.
No, honestly, it's and especially since they rolled in the fill into apps feature. So now when you log into your apps, particularly for folks who review a lot of devices, because it's like installing all these things and everything just becomes a lot easier.
You can see right here, Brian, on the camera shot.
Sorry, this promotion is for new LastPass users. Your account was created 4 months ago. So that means you're not new.
I know, exactly.
Not new.
Yeah, so was it a mistake early on?
Must have been.
I don't know. I was able to get in on it. I just thought it was for new and existing customers. But
I'm not sure. I didn't see it. I assumed it was a bug. Or maybe they just had a limited amount and they got it out.
Yeah, that could be too. But anyways, regardless, LastPass is worth it at a buck a month. So if you're not using it to manage your passwords, it's certainly a great way. It's not the only password manager on the block. 1Password is another one. I know there's a bunch of others, but it's the one that I use and I love it. So anytime you get a deal for a free year of their premium service, it seems like a no-brainer to me. So check it out.
Totally.
Another thing that you should probably check out right now, if you haven't already, is this little game. You may have heard of it. It's by this this guy who created this game called Flappy Bird. And
I'm all over
It's called Swing Copters.
I'm all over
I can't do it. No. I don't want to do it.
Oh, man.
Don't make me do it.
All right. So here we go. It's kind of like Flappy Birds, but vertical.
This guy has invented it's a genre. I feel like he's invented a genre.
See, I didn't even make it to the first.
Wait, what do you do? How do you control it?
So each tap changes your direction, and you try and go through. Here, I'm just going to go like this to see how high I can get.
Yeah.
Okay, see? I'm doing
all
right.
So this is all he did? He just took Flappy Bird and moved it vertical?
It's basically
flip
vertical.
Just flip the phone over.
Wow, I just beat my high score. You guys witnessed it. 3.
That was a good job. Here's the thing about this guy, all right? I think this guy's a genius.
Obviously, he is.
This is amazing.
So there you go.
I'm on board. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. Oh, I got to sign in.
See, it's really hard. So, yeah,
this
every tap.
One of those games where I'm going to actively avoid it, and I will just get enough exposure to it incidentally that I'll know all about it.
That's not cool.
It's the genre of this style of game is impossible controls, but yet you still want to try and play and learn them.
If you tap to the right, does he go to the right?
Yes.
No. Tap?
Okay. It's inverted.
It's inverted.
It's where your finger is on the screen actually doesn't matter. All you're doing is changing the course of direction. But the problem is when you hit it, it changes and it takes a second for it to drift and start going the other
way.
But
also, the longer you hold it, the more speed he gets in that direction. Did that.
So it's like drunk Flappy Birds where they spin wildly in either direction.
Yeah, watch. Ready?
Uh huh. Oh my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
It's a whole new world.
That's a whole new dimension
that's going to make you throw your phone against the wall even faster.
Wow. That long tap.
So there you go. If you want to, if you want to hurt your phone, check it out, Swing Copters. Sorry.
Well,
we had to talk about it, right?
For something completely different.
Yeah, completely different.
Hey, you remember Google News and Weather? Remember that little app? Or did you forget about it?
So was it ever a standalone app?
It was a standalone app.
Oh, yeah. News and Weather was
It was that widget.
Literally the oldest thing Google ships on a phone as a default app.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, not any longer because Google remembered they have it. And a new updated version of News and Weather came out and adapting the new material design that we're all raving about. And it's got a great organization of news from tons of sources. As well as weather from the Weather Bureau when it's up.
From
over 65,000 publications. Simple swipe access to categories such as top stories, technology, sports, and weather. You can tune your layout with any 60 country-specific editions, home screen widgets, personalized news sections, all that great stuff. But the rollout's been a little odd, hasn't it? It hasn't been available to everybody in the Google Play Store.
I checked my devices, and I really only had, like one or two that I could install it on.
Yeah.
And the rest of them said not available in your region. So I ended up having to, Ron, go to your Plus post and install it from there.
Yeah, so...
There is apparently... I just found out a new version. Apparently that version's buggy. And there's some version that stops force closes or something. I don't know. Google fixes the Play Store.
Yep.
And don't use me as your distribution.
As your source, the Ron App Store.
So why does this still exist? Have they seen Google Now where like it shows weather and news?
Right, but Google Now is serving you up weather and news that Google Now decides you need, where this is a bit more browsy and a bit more kind of, you know, like I feel like Google Now is like the front page and then this is like the, you know, sections A through G of the paper.
Google News the app.
Why did I choose that one? It was such a random one. I don't need to see that.
Jason.
I just, they're all bad.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
Jeez. Get off that page. Pretty much every single article of that page was something I don't want to read right now.
It's just so simple. It's like two pages. It's like the new. Well, no, it's one page. It's like the weather up top, and then a stream of news.
It
opens a web browser.
It's literally, Ron. It's literally News and Weather.
Yeah.
That's the name of the app. In fact, I don't know. It's just really simple. This app just got news and weather.
I just prefer a little more. I don't feel that justifies an icon. I'm picky about my app drawer.
Well, especially
was one of the things I disabled day one and totally forgot it existed.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to see them applying the material design concept and evolving stuff. And it's funny because now I just picture teams at Google are working on every app. And I mean, I'm sure we're going to see them all roll out in that way. But it's
that's going to be so much fun.
Yeah. So
done. Yes. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. See, there you go.
That still exists. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then I'll move this one over here. Maybe.
This is riveting.
I know. First time adding widgets on the V4, by the way.
In Chinese.
This is important. And there we go. Yep. There's a widget.
Cool.
This is what they call a widget, ladies and gentlemen.
I like when you make it the full screen. It's like the app, but it's not the app.
I can swipe into it.
That's true.
That's why. Yeah.
It's kind of like Google Now.
Yeah,
kind of is. Exactly.
So anyway, so go to the Google Play Store and look up News and Weather and see if you can install it on your app. If not, just be patient. I'm sure they'll get that fixed.
Yeah.
Shortly. So Gina, right. We got an email.
We do. We have an email. Hey, I wanted to ask you to take some time to talk about Google Helpouts. In the wake of the Robin Williams tragedy, mental health has surfaced again in our society. And as a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Florida, as well as a tech geek, as soon as I saw that Helpouts had a health section, I jumped on board. Google's done a great job at having a system through Helpouts in which anyone in the U.S. with a smart device or webcam can connect with a licensed clinician. I have been able to have a session with a client who lived in Alaska. With me living in Florida, this client would have never been able to reach me until Helpouts came along. I don't think people are talking about Helpouts enough, and I hope you can make some sort of public service announcement so all your listeners can know that they have this great resource at their disposal in order to discuss any mental health, personal, or relationship issues they feel they may want to talk to someone about. This is an email from Renzo Taranga. And I got to tell you, it's true. Google Helpouts doesn't really get a whole lot of attention. I honestly haven't looked at it in a long time. But after I read this email from Renzo, I went to Google Helpouts. I went to helpouts.google.com and actually started pouring through the help section. And there are a lot of therapists in Google Helpouts. And, like, who doesn't need a little therapy? And I actually found Renzo's listing and I watched his video. And I was thinking, like, wow, what a great, you know, what a great resource. And I mean, of course, there's Helpouts for everything, not just counseling, help with computer problems, cooking, fitness and nutrition. It's really a treasure trove. And I've been meaning to. I remember when it came out, I'd been meaning to really kind of try it out. I'm a little bit shy about getting on a webcam, save for these shows.
It's true.
But these shows aside, I'm a little bit shy about getting on a webcam with a stranger and, you know, I don't know, showing them my art and asking them to help me get better at it. But it's actually a really cool program. So anyway, a little PSA for Google Helpouts. Thanks, Renzo. Have any of you guys used Google Helpouts? Have posted one or taken someone up on one or scheduled one?
No. Same as you, Gina. I've kind of forgotten about it over time and, you know, I realize how great of a service it is. I just haven't really thought of it in the perspective of, like, how do I apply this to me? You know what I mean? Either from getting help or giving help, I suppose. But it's fantastic, and I think his point is really great. Just the fact that, you know, but, you know, people who are dealing with mental health issues or really any kind of issue along those lines, you know, sometimes people don't know that they have someone that they can talk to. This would be a pretty great, easy way to find someone who they could talk to. And, you know, maybe that helps in their situation. So aside from all the other things that you can do there, you know, art, music, like you said, computers, everything else.
On Helpouts here, I found this Manisha Kapoor is offering expert advice on what to wear to work.
Oh,
so that's under the fashion and beauty section. No, but there's ways you can learn how to play piano. You can learn how to sing. You can learn how to program. I mean, it's interesting. It's I honestly didn't even know this existed, much less was an app. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Helpouts is weird. Nobody talks about it. And I don't know of any like competitors to it. It seems like a neat idea, but it's just something where everybody just goes, I don't know if I really need that or want to do anything or. So I don't know. I'd love to hear what the numbers are like as far as users.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to hear that.
There was,
like any week now I expect like a spring cleaning post where it's like, yeah, this Helpouts thing, we kind of decided not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really just a layer on top of Hangouts, I think it just doesn't cost. Although, but you can set prices. So you
they charge.
Play guitar. Mm-hmm. They charge. Yeah, people charge.
Hangouts and plus you eBay.
Yeah, Hangouts plus eBay. So, I mean, it feels like all the platform and infrastructure is there for Google to kind of keep this going. But yeah, it's true. You never really hear about it. And I should do a couple and report back.
Go on assignment, Gina.
Yeah, I'll go on assignment. Yeah.
All right. So, anyways, thank you. It's a great reference there, Renzo. And hopefully, you know, this will reach some people who might want to check it out. And if you do, actually, this is a great opportunity for you to email us and let us know, because we'd love to hear about your experience too. AAA@twit.tv.
I found Renzo's profile on Helpouts.
Hey, there you go. Yeah.
There he goes. Counseling
Renzo
therapy session with Renzo.
Yeah, I almost scheduled a session with Renzo. Yeah. He was so convincing that he'd be able to help me out.
Yeah, no, here we got Brian. Here, you throw that up. There you go. It's in the chat. Yeah, no, he charges. So his first help out is free, and then he charges $55 per 45 minutes, which, okay, if you've been to therapy, that's a deal.
Exactly, so, a deal, yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
So that's pretty cool.
Well, thank you, Renzo. Appreciate it. And everybody, check it out. Helpouts.
I assume that's Renzo store who wrote in.
Yeah. It seems unique name. Like it would be.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, let's thank our third and last sponsor of today's episode. That is Prosper. In 72 hours, you could have $35,000 to cover your needs. What would you do with that money? Would you pay off high-rate credit cards? Would you start a business, a home improvement project? If you fill out an easy online application, provide a few details, you're going to see a rate online almost instantly. Prosper offers low fixed rates, unsecured personal loans, that's no collateral required, and has multi-year terms available. And I know I'm a broken record with the home improvement stuff, but it's true. Once you own a house, you think of a million different ways that you'd improve your house. The problem is you don't always have that money.
Maybe if he fixed the record, he wouldn't have to fix the house.
That's true. Maybe I should start with the record player is
right,
what you're
saying.
Okay. All right. Cool. Or I could just go to Prosper and get the money that I need and do the things that I need to do. And that might just be the way to go. Prosper is Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. With Prosper's innovative peer-to-peer lending process, there are no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates, and you'll never set foot in a bank. Prosper has more than 2 million members and over $1 billion in funded loans. 2 million members. This is what peer-to-peer lending is all about. It's distributing this money from other members into your pocket, essentially. It's just like peer-to-peer technologies like chat and all that kind of stuff. It's distributed financing of whatever you're trying to do, and that's all thanks to Prosper. Just go to prosper.com/twit to check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for our viewers. And Prosper's pretty awesome. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days and a $50 Visa prepaid card. Go to prosper.com/twit to check it out for yourself. We thank Prosper for their continued support of All About Android and the Twit Network. Okay, it is that time. It's time to battle in the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Sorry, I inhaled all that fire.
Wow. Oh. That's a lot of fire.
Whew. That kind of burns going down. Okay, let's take a look at last week's straw poll, episode 175. Who wins with Ron away?
My streak was broken, too, I saw.
Yes,
too.
Your streak was
as
broken.
It should have been, because that app should not have won.
You have to repair. Yeah. You have to change some minds here. Yep. Last week, it does appear that people like the gory games of Surgeon
Simulator.
That
game freaks me out.
Yeah. It was one of those things that I was like, oh, yeah, this is totally like the game for me. And then as I was showing it off on the air, I was like, you know what? I don't know if I want to go any deeper into this, because this could get ugly really fast. Yep. Apparently
the game
people
was intense. It was intense.
It can be intense. But there you go. Surgeon Simulator, 66% of the votes. Man, we had a lot of votes last week.
We did. 600.
Tap Path, second at 19%. And Super Better, almost second, which is another way of saying third, at 16%.
Which is interesting now. So 33 weeks into the year, the current tally is our guests are in third place with 5 wins. Jason and Gina are tied for second with 8 wins.
Whoa, we're tied, Gina.
I'm still on top with 12 wins, although the gap is lessening, and I'm concerned. Thank you, Wade.
You're
County
within
for
a
the
month
stats.
Of either Gina or I.
I'm within a month of not being in first place, and it's barely September. I need to get to November before I can start relaxing.
And don't count the guests out, because they could go on a run. They could go on a collective run.
Guest. Yeah, exactly. Go team guests. Exactly. We should totally make sure it's all about Android shirts. Team guest.
And just send it to anyone that's ever on the show. Exactly. You have to wear this if you want to come on the show. So, all right. Well, there we go. Oh, and I don't know if you missed this little factoid from last week, but every year a different one of us has won. So
I
one
did
year,
miss that. Yeah.
1 year Eileen won, 1 year I won, 1 year Gina won. That was last year. Oh, and this year the pressure is on you.
Could this be the year?
We'll see.
Let's see.
This is Ron's year. It's preordained.
I've got another quarter to get through. If I can get through the next, 4 months of the year? Yeah, 4 months. September, October, November, December. Yeah, 4 months. I can do it. I believe in it.
Yeah, we'll see.
I came prepared
see.
Today.
We'll see what happens. This no, is, I know you did.
Yeah, did you see? One. Did you see? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Well,
but
let's have Gina go first.
Gina goes first.
I love the arena.
I go first. All right. Well, I'll admit I was scrambling a little bit, but at the last minute, I came across a really great game. Not a huge gamer, but I am a child of the 80s, so I loves me some Pac-Man. And there's a new Pac-Man game out. It is called Pac-Man Friends, and it is free. I think it was released fairly recently, the last couple of weeks in the Play Store. And it is, as they say, kind of a new twist on an old classic. It's Pac-Man. All the kind of rules that you remember of Pac-Man, that the goal is to eat the pellets, avoid the ghosts, eat the ghosts. But in this one, you do connect to Google Play Games. You sign Excellent. In with your Google account as usual, which is really nice. But this one, you control Pac-Man by tilting your device. There's all different kinds of mazes. So you check the first one. And there you go. The adventure begins. So you tilt your device in order to move Pac-Man. So Pac-Man moves in this kind of like drifty, loosey-goosey kind of way, which takes a little getting used to if you're like committed to the old game. I just chose the first one. I wasn't sure. There are a few different modes of control. But yeah, I think the first one is kind of like your basic, you know, kind of tilt and yeah, there you go. So there Jason's eating the pellets.
Okay. Oh, and then I got to go up there.
And then you got to go up there. Yeah.
This might be a hard one to show off because I got to tilt.
Because you got to tilt a little bit. But
I'll try.
There's a couple of ads, you know. Okay, but it's free to play. There's in-app purchase, but I made it 12 or 13 levels without ever being prompted to purchase anything, although there are ads occasionally. Starts out really simple, just like this, right?
It's
kind of like, you just move through the maze, you eat all the pellets, and then exit through the gift shop there. Yeah, there you go. So
exit through the gift shop. Very
perfect.
Nice.
Yeah, perfect. So that's just your basic gameplay. As you move on to the next mazes, the next levels, you unlock friends, which means Pac-Man has a friend. It's called Pac-Man Friends. Your friend is another Pac-Man who can also eat pellets and who's kind of like on your team. And some of your friends have special powers. So there's that dark Pac-Man is your Pac-Man friend.
Okay.
Right there. And it's nice, especially for people like me who don't play games a lot. I actually really like the little explainer instructions before you go into each level. So there you go. So now you and your friend are kind of tilting around. Yeah. Oh, watch the ghost. Oh, okay.
Save me.
So then you can save the person with cherries. Or save your friend. There you go. Okay, now roll off, and there you go.
I'm not even looking at the stream right now because I'm just trying to win. So I'm sorry if you can't see half of this.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. You can totally see. All right, now you're Pac-Man from
the school. I think we need the shot of Jason playing the game to show just how ridiculous it is.
I imagine his face is kind of See, it's fun.
It is fun.
Everybody should vote for this. I need a win, you guys. I really need a win. It's Pac-Man. Who doesn't love Pac-Man? If you don't love Pac-Man, you don't love America. Come on.
Wow.
Everybody vote for me.
It's true.
Apparently it's jingoistic. I had no idea.
So thank you.
Really appreciate
that.
Thank you.
Cool.
So,
Ryan.
Waka 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 waka
waka. Nice. The mazes get more fun, the friends more copious, there's fruit, there's like
fireworks. You know,
there's fireworks, there's stars, there's high scores, which Jason is racking up right now.
It's a lot of fun. I'm so good at this game.
Enjoyed myself. Yeah, there's a lot of positive affirmation when you win, which is kind of pretty great. Yeah, there's certain friends who are like invisible, like who can go behind the ghosts. There's some fruit. Yeah.
Excellent.
There's a banana and a peach. It's a lot of fun, you guys. Pac-Man.
Pac-Man Friends.
I will admit I was walking through SFO and I got back on Sunday and for some reason in my head I was just going doo 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 and like I was just saying it over and over again. I was like, it's Pac-Man. So Pac-Man must be in the ether.
Yeah, Pac-Man. Pac-Man's in the ether. I love that song. You know, in researching this, I downloaded the, like, Namco released it, like, released, like, the old school Pac-Man. It's just not as fun with the swiping.
Yeah.
You know? It just this isn't quite as fun. So this is why I like the controls or
what are you doing, Pac-Man?
You're doing Pac-Man.
Upper.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
What was that? I don't even know what that was.
Isn't that the sound?
Oh, okay.
Like that. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay.
That's the ticket.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's all I got.
Well,
so that's Pac-Man Friends. Check it out for free. There you go. Ron. You go.
I'm up. So
Ron
Richards.
Richards.
Yes. So last time I was here in this chair, I went the game route like Gina did, and you guys spoke, and you said that you didn't care for Sum-Sum, which I don't blame you. And
I thought it was cool.
It's a fun game. I know, despite the line login. Some people yelled at me, but like, oh, you're going to
have the line login. Yeah.
How many logins do you have? Anyway. But so I'm going back on more of the productivity side. If you're like me, you use Google Drive and use Dropbox, and you've been using it since they've come out. And now here we are in 2014, and it's been several years. I mean, how long has Dropbox been around for? It's been, you know, 5+ years. My Dropbox is a mess. And it's the kind of thing where I'm like my long things, like things to do when I have time, I'm going to clean up my Dropbox, and I'm just never going to do it. But this new app that I found, which is free in the Google Play Store called Unclouded, can help you take control of your cloud storage. Basically, it is a great app that will analyze your cloud storage and tell you, you know, kind of similar to the app that Jason that you did a couple weeks ago, where it was a hard drive analyzer.
Mm-hmm.
This will analyze the files in your cloud-based system and help you understand what's there. So, for example, here we are. We're looking at my Dropbox, and I'm currently using 53 gig of my 106 gig that I have available, and it's showing that I'm how much I'm using. A little visualization there. I can switch. You can explore all the various folders, and we're seeing all my kind of stuff. And a lot of this is really old, but it gives you an idea of how many. You know, how much memory the different how many files are taken up. So I've got 102 files in test that's taken up 390 meg. You can look by category. So it'll analyze and it'll tell me that I've got 16 gig of PDFs, 12 gig of ebooks, you know, 7.8 gig of images. So if you're really trying to get a, you know, kind of control over your Dropbox, if you're using up too much room, you don't know. It's, you know, honestly, when you get all these folders and people invite you to folders, it's hard to keep track of where those files are. So this kind of gives you a good sense. It tells you the last modified files, you know, what were modified this month, this year, you know, 2 years ago, older ones. Like, for example, I've got ones that are older than 2 years old, 6 gig taking up. I could probably get rid of those, or I can download them. I obviously don't need them. What totally nailed it for me with this app is it shows you duplicates, and it will analyze and tell you all the various duplicate files that you have out there. And so, you know, for example, I work for Image Comics, so I get a lot of Walking Dead, but I've got two instances of the Walking Dead Volume 1 PDF. I don't need two of them. I just need one, if any. And then finally, you can go through and analyze all your files and all that sort of stuff and just go through everything. So it's really cool. Currently, right now, it's got Drive and Dropbox support. Real simple to log in. When you go to your Google Drive, it gives you a little more info than Dropbox. Dropbox is just simply files. But within Google Drive, it tells you how much space you're taking up in your Gmail, your photos, and your Drive itself, which is pretty cool. And you can easily navigate. Some people might not like to navigate the various Drive interfaces. This gives you a different approach to it. And breaking it down by categories, breaking it down by modification date makes it a lot easier to track down and clear out that Drive space, especially if you're paying for it. You can also search within the app. So if you're searching for a specific file, it's easy just to search for it. So it's called Unclouded, and it's the kind of app that once you get, you're not really sure how you lived without. So I would definitely check it out if you use Dropbox or Google Drive and keep track of your storage. All right, so it's Unclouded.
I love Unclouded.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Nice.
Yes,
you don't love it enough to bring it to the arena, though, I see.
I brought it to the other arena.
Oh, the other show, the show that we don't talk about?
Yeah.
Oh, I see, the show that we don't talk about. The show that we're not involved in.
Look, it's really hard doing two Android shows.
Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah.
I'm sure it is.
But you don't laugh as much on that show, do you?
You're right. No, I just write a lot for that show. So, I write scripts for that show.
Yeah,
it's hard work.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you
But no, Unclouded is fantastic.
Great app. Yep. And it's pretty. It looks good. It looks nice.
It really is.
There you go.
There we go. Okay, so Ron Amadio, what app are you featuring? In fact, I have it installed. I know the answer, but everybody else doesn't. So talk about it and I'll show it off.
My app is RunKeeper. I mean, it's going to be real short. It basically tracks your, it uses your phone's GPS and kind of tracks your running, your distance and how fast you're going and what like your pace is. So it's really good for, you know, I sit in front of a computer all day. You try not to get fat when you sit on your butt and don't do anything. So I like to go running, and this is good, like, motivation to kind of improve and get better. And, you know, when you can see what was my pace today, what was my pace yesterday, it makes you kind of want to run longer, further, faster, all that stuff. You can have it, like, give you training programs if you want to prepare for, like, a marathon run or something. You can have it, you know, brag to your friends about your latest run and how far it was. And all of this really cool stuff that kind of motivates you to run more and do things and be more active. So, you know, you basically turn it on, you hit start tracking, and it will, you know, fire up your GPS and drain your battery like crazy. And you get a little map afterwards of where you've ran and how quickly you're going. Yeah, it's you know, you just told it you're running, and now you're standing still. So your 0 mile per hour speed.
Your pace is awful, Jason.
Yeah.
I got to work on this.
Pace really bad.
Yeah.
64-minute mile. That's bad.
Well, I'll do my best. Maybe tomorrow I can sit a faster mile than that. But,
this is kind of sent me on this weird quest where it's like, now I want a really small Android device that I can bring with me when I'm running. Because carrying it, the worst part about this app is, you know, you have to bring like a 5-inch Android phone with you when you go running. So I'm kind of investigating about how small of a device I can get this to run on. But it's cool, like it tracks your activity for the whole day, so you can kind of see when you, you know, compare this run to yesterday's run or the day before's or last week's or whatever.
And it has workout schedules and stuff in here. What's that all about? Is this like information that's entered in, or they're like plans?
Yeah, it's like a weight loss plan.
Oh,
yeah, there's all sorts of, there's little plans there on how to, you know, prepare for a long run or lose weight or whatever. You know, yeah, you can, so that'll let you kind of work up to a marathon without, hopefully without, you know, dying or breaking something or
hopefully,
pulling
a
muscle or whatever.
I would pull a muscle at the very least. cool. It was awesome. It's a nice design. And when I had it go starting and everything, I noticed it talks to you and stuff, gives you the information if you tap up there, lets you know kind of where you're at and everything.
Yeah, the talking thing is neat. Like, you know, if you bring your phone along, you might as well bring headphones and listen to music while you're running. And every 5 minutes, it verbally gives you a status update through the headphones, where it's like, you know, you've been running for 5 minutes. This is your average. This is how far you've run. So it's a cool little... It's a cool way to kind of keep track of how long you've been running and what time it is without having to stare at your phone and what your pace is and all that.
Nice. Looks great. RunKeeper.
Fun fact, RunKeeper was one of the first Android apps I ever reviewed when I was at Revision 3 doing that.
I thought you were going to say all about Android. No.
Back in the early when Eileen and I were working together at Rev 3, that was one of the first iteration of it, and it has come a long way.
I was
going
to say,
that,
how far has it come?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those apps where you pick it up and you're like, they have iterated on this so many times.
Yep.
It does everything you could possibly want related to running. Like, this is, like Ron said, this is a very, very old app that has been around a while and is just constantly updated with new features and stuff.
It's good to see them keeping up with it. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. So that is RunKeeper.
Before you get to your app, McButterPants in the chat room, thank you, pointed out, I should have mentioned, I'm sorry, with Unclouded, the free version allows you to browse your storage but not do anything to it. And then you can go to the apps themselves to do something with it. If you pay the in-app purchase for the premium version, then you get read-write access and you can delete files directly from this app.
Yeah, I can't remember how much that is. I think it's a couple of dollars, but...
We'll find out. But yeah, so that's an important point to make. And I
because it keeps you out from needing to go into those other apps.
See, so premium... Allow. Here we go. We'll do this. I'm sorry to interrupt.
It's okay. I'm sorry.
So premium, delete files and folders. You can upload directly to your cloud storage. You can send files. You can rename and move. And you can create folders. All pretty cool. And you could do that for no connection.
Pretty sure it was $1.99.
Wow, that was so anticlimactic. I'm sorry about that. You can do that for...
Still no connection.
No connection.
Your Wi-Fi's off.
You can do that for, I'm waiting for it to register, for $2.99.
Ah, okay, so there you go. All right.
Thanks.
right. Cool. So that's unclouded again, Ron.
Hey, these are the little tips and tricks we do to get on top of the arena.
I see, I see. I see how you edge your way into continuing your
when you finish your review, I'm like, oh, one more thing.
Oh, yeah, there's actually this other really cool feature that I forgot to tell you. Okay, so mine is called Fragment. It's $1.99. It's a photo editing app, and I've kind of gotten burnt out on photo editing apps, I have to say. But early on, I feel like I was downloading them all. I was like, oh, these are all so great. Now apparently, I just don't have enough time to really play with photo editing apps. And all I do is like stockpile pictures of my kids and my family these days. And someday I'll go back and be able to do something with them. But right now, I just don't have time to do that. But Fragment is kind of different. And, well, it's actually very different. It's less of a photo editing app and like I'm going to put this retro filter on or whatever. And it's more about creating very unique, stylized kind of abstract stuff. So I have a photo here. I can, you know, crop it to any aspect ratio to start off with. Whatever, I'll just do that for a random pick here.
Whoa.
Now, okay, so here's what you have to start. And yeah, I'm just trying to make sure that all that stuff's in there too. So obviously this is completely different. There's a little full random mode down there, which suddenly it went away. There we go. That allows you to kind of cycle through all the different combinations that you can do, right? So you can find, you know, this, you can play around and really kind of move these things around. You can adjust the contrast, you can adjust.
Oh, so it fragments the image based off of a pattern. Oh, that's really kind of cool.
I'm trying to do this sideways. Yes, exactly. So there's contrast. I'm doing this sideways, so I'm totally inaccurate right now. But you can kind of play around with it. And, you know, like, I don't know what you're going to do with some of this necessarily. It's not like you're going to take your family photo and do this and, hey, check it out. We've got five eyes. And they're all in abstract, weird places. But it's kind of fun. Was that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. It's kind of like a kaleidoscope. No, let's keep that. So you can kind of cycle through and I do this no justice. They have in here, let's see here, inspiration. So some of the inspiration photos of the things that people have done with it are just kind of interesting and cool and maybe a little more subtle than what I was working on. But just kind of create some crazy, unique looking art like this. You know, it's kind of hiding behind the clouds. I'm not even sure how they pulled that off, but I really like that. It's just a way to create very unique photos. And I don't know. Oh, I'm still running, apparently. Runtastic or Runkeepers telling me that I'm running right now. I'm not running. I'm not.
77 minutes, 6 seconds per mile.
I'm not running. Okay. Thank you. So anyways, there you go. Fragment. It's $1.99 and it's just a lot of fun to play around with. It's different than your normal photo editing app. And of course, in the demo, they're going to make it look really easy.
Because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you can kind of twist it around.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. There you go. It's called Fragment. Check it out. Everything looks very kind of modern and current. You know, it's, I don't know. Actually,
looks like a record cover.
No, that's cool. It does.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally realizing this is hilarious. I didn't realize this before. I featured an app in the arena called Fragments, and it was I think it was a screensaver, a desktop cycler through 365 different fragment style images.
Yeah.
I only now at this very moment realized that they were probably created with this app on iOS.
Interesting.
So there we go.
And I think you have a thing
for this app, though. You're never going to find it. There's a Fragment API in Android, and this name is not going to be.
It's going to be a hard one. Let's see here. How can I give people a better way to find it? It's just Fragment. Or Pixite. PIXITE is the name of the developer.
There you go. Okay.
So that'll get you there. Cool. There you go. $1.99. A lot of fun. Okay. So those are the apps this week. Which is your favorite? Is it Pac-Man Friends, Unclouded, Runkeeper, or Fragment? You can vote. Go to AAApoll.com/176 and let us know which is your favorite, and we'll cover it next week and show you the results. But we always like to check in on the early results. And right now, Unclouded is ahead.
Wow.
Ron.
It's early. You never know. The early returns. Early returns. You can't. You know.
Pac-Man could.
Pac-Man,
you guys. Pac-Man.
It's fun.
Waka, waka, waka.
Two votes. Those are pity votes.
That'll change, Ron.
Go team guest. Go team guest.
Go team guest. Runkeeper is a great app. I was surprised actually that we didn't. Thank you, Brian. That we hadn't done Runkeeper.
All right, fine. It looks like it's going to be between Unclouded and Pac-Man Friends.
You can't tell in the early results. You got to wait. You got to wait it out.
We just say that. It's not true.
Wait till the India folks wake up.
It actually is true. Yeah. Things change wildly after the fact. That is it for this week. Fantastic episode as always. And Ron Amadio, you're just always fantastic on the show. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about all this stuff.
Thanks. Anytime. It's always really fun to come here and talk about this stuff.
Right on. Do you have anything in the works that you want to talk about, or do you just want to kind of point people to ours and your work there?
Next month is September. September is crazy time. There's IFA and the Note 4 and the Moto 360 and the Moto X and all holiday craziness is happening in September. So yeah, arstechnica.com. We will cover all that stuff, or you can find me on Google+ or Twitter sometimes. So yeah, just Google me. You'll find it.
Excellent. Thank you again, sir. We'll have you back soon. The other Ron?
The other Ron. That's my status now. No. I gladly defer to Mr. Ron Amadio.
No, I'm other Ron.
So you can find me at about.me/RonXO, where you get links to my Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all fun stuff, Google+ as well. And you can always go to my ThinkUp at RonXO.ThinkUp.com, where you can see wonderful insights about all my social media postings and musings. So there you go. Yeah.
Martha Plimpton and Goonies.
I was just talking about Martha Plimpton. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's always a fun time. I didn't really have any big
Google's
big
Martha
hits.
Plimpton.
You know who Martha Plimpton is?
I mean, I know the
she's
cast of
Goonies.
The Goonies.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
She's Steph.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Yeah, I've had a crush on her since 1985. all right, then. That wasn't weird. And finally, by day, I'm over at Image Comics at imagecomics.com, where we're putting out some great comic books. I urge you to go check out. They're available on Comixology, our website, imagecomics.com, iBooks, Google Play, and the Google Play Store. We're there. So you check it all out. Good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you. And Gina, so tell us about this ThinkUp thing that Ron's always going on about.
I love the ThinkUp. I'm like the chief marketing officer at ThinkUp.
I know, right? You're a product evangelist.
I know. I want some shares.
I like that ThinkUp lets me favorite tweets that you from like a year ago. It's like, Ron, a year ago, I get to catch up.
Yeah.
ThinkUp is the thing that I build during the day. It's my company. It's my app. It is social media analytics for regular people, not for chief marketing officers or people who fill out TPS reports, just regular people who like to use Twitter and Facebook and want to know a little bit more about how they spend their time there. You can go to thinkup.com and you can sign up for a free trial, full product, 14 days free, or credit card, sign up at Facebook or Twitter and give it a try. And when I'm not working on ThinkUp or doing AAA, I'm also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. And I'll be on tomorrow with Jeff and Leo, and you should stop on by. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I just want to know what I need to do to make the ThinkUp homepage. That's all I want.
Oh, you're so close. You're close. It's going to happen. I think what it's going to take is a CMS that lets us easily add people to the homepage.
Don't go behind the curtain too much, Gina.
And suddenly we're building a blogging tool.
Right.
Exactly.
Awesome. Thank you, Gina. And Brian, what about you? Huh?
What?
What's up with you? Yeah.
I couldn't hide this week because after the earthquake, the fill light broke. So it's always.
Oh, is that why I couldn't? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
So I'm not in the shadows today. And
I didn't realize that was an earthquake thing.
Apparently, there's a Padre in the studio right now. And occasionally,
roaming.
I do show. And occasionally, I mean like once a week on Thursdays at 11 o'clock, I do a know-how show.
It's pretty occasional.
You're never quite sure what he's going to do for the show, but, so if you want to catch me somewhere else on the Twit Network, do that show on Thursdays. Yeah, I should probably just toss back to Jason. Jason?
Okay, thank you for tossing that. About.me/Jason Howell. You can follow my music at yellowgoldmusic.com. And I have this other Android show that we don't like to talk about on this show because it gets kind of awkward, but it's called, you may not have heard of this term, but it's called Android App Arena, and it's twit.tv/arena. It's every Friday, and I feature 4 to 5 good apps. Last week was a fantastic episode, and I hope to follow it up with another one. We had Francisco Franco of the Franco Kernel fame, among other things, on as a developer interview. So really good stuff. Check it out. twit.tv/arena.
In all of our humor, it is a very good show. You're doing a great job. You are quite talented at what you do, Jason.
Thank you, Ron.
Indeed.
I needed to hear that from
Cosine.
You.
Cosine. Cosine.
Thank you, Oil. All right, that's it for this week. For All About Android, the other AAA show, the first AAA show. leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can also send us an email, aaa@twit.tv. We are on Twitter. We're at Android Show there. We're on Google Plus. We have a community as well as an account. Just search for All About Android. You'll find us. We have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com, that informs the topics that we talk about on this show. Let us know what's important to you. And let's see here. Show notes, past episodes, all that stuff. We found at twit.tv/arena. You can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
Bye.